the impossible task of keeping a sermon brief that has Isaiah 61, Mary tearing down the empires, and this beautiful passage from Psalm 126, but I'll try and do my best. We hopped in the car and headed there for the first time. Well, the first time in 8 months since the storm hit. And my friend and I made nervous conversation. It was a bit awkward. We were close, but we kept the conversation very awkward. I think it was because he was nervous to return home. He left in August 25th, 2005. And this was now February 2006. And no one really knew how New Orleans would be. So as we drove over the bridge and as we drove deeper and deeper and deeper into the city, you could see the nervousness in his face. We all saw the pictures from the convention center. We all saw the pictures from the Superdome. We all saw the pictures from Canal Street. So we were wondering what would it look like to stand face to face with the ruins of New Orleans. And so there we were. We drove down Poydras. And then we turned onto Canal. We parked. And as we got ready to get out of the door, there was a parade coming through. In typical New Orleans fashion, a parade with the colorful umbrellas, saxophones, trumpets, and wouldn't you guess it, them singing, "Oh, When the Saints Go Marching In." Oh, when the saints go marching in this festive, festive vibe as we try to get out of our car to see what New Orleans would look like after the storm. And there it was. The people returning back home after being exiled and refugeed in an American city. They came back singing, "Oh, when the saints go marching in." You would have thought it was a party. You would have thought it was Mardi Gras. Well, it sort of was Mardi Gras. At least it was right before Mardi Gras. And that reminds me of this story in Psalm 126. When the Lord restored the fortunes of Zion, we were like those who dreamed. Psalm 126 is a song of ascent. The people are grateful, they're energetic, they are rejoicing, they are shouting songs of joy and praise and acclamation because they have returned to Zion. They've been in captivity in Babylon, right? And when we read many of the Psalms and when we read many of the book of Isaiah, we hear the people wrestling with their captivity in Babylon. And so they've been in Babylon. They've been under the rule of King Nebuchadnezzar. They've thought that their oppression, that their captivity would last forever. Generations had passed and they'd stayed in Babylon. But when we meet them here in Psalm 126, the people are rejoicing because this day is like a dream for them. Their oppressors have been overthrown. The land, the fortunes of Zion has been restored. The king of Persia who conquered Babylon let all of the people go back to where they came from. So we get this psalm that says, when the Lord restored the fortunes of Zion, we were like those who dreamed. Then our mouths were filled with laughter, our tongues would shout of joy. And then it was said among the nation, the Lord has done great things for them. The Lord has done great things for us. We rejoice, oh, restore our fortunes. May those who sow in tears reap with shouts of joy. In his book, God's Dream, Desmond Tutu says that when they went to the polls in April of 1994, it was a religious experience. He says, normally when people go to vote, it's a secular thing. But he said what happened in South Africa, Maria, in April of 1994 is that when the people went to vote, it was a religious experience, that they counted it a badge of honor to say, how long did you wait in line? I waited in line for 2 hours. Oh, that's nothing. I waited in line for 4 hours. Oh, that's nothing. I waited in line for 6 hours. And he says that through the process of waiting and voting, a spiritual transformation happened in South Africa. He said it was a realization of God's dream. He said this political act was a spiritual one. And he goes on and he asks this question, as people would say to him, you know, Desmond Tutu, why are you so political? And he would say, well, go ask the people of Israel when God freed them, was God being political or was God being religious, Lauren? Go ask Moses when God called him, was that a political act or was that a religious act to liberate his people? Desmond Tutu said that when they went to the polls, it seemed political, but it was really spiritual. I know y'all have been staying woke this whole year. And I know y'all stayed woke this week. I know y'all stayed up long into the night, and we needed evidences like what happened on Tuesday, Sally, for us to see that sometimes a political act can be a very spiritual one, that sometimes we need to see through our political process the role that God plays in the world that God plays in manifesting God's dream for the world. Sure, all of our hopes cannot be put in politics, but some of our hopes must be manifested through the political reality that we have. Pastor Maria shared with us a sermon from Dr. King on Christmas of 1963. In Christmas of 1963, Dr. King preached on Christmas of 1967, Dr. King preached his last sermon. And here's an excerpt from it. It says, in 1963, on a sweltering August afternoon, we stood in D.C. and I talked to the nation about many things. But towards the end of that afternoon, I tried to talk to the nation about a dream that I had had. And I must confess to you that not long after I spoke about that dream, I started seeing it turn into a nightmare. I remember the first time I saw that dream turn into a nightmare. It was when four beautiful, unoffending, innocent Negro girls were murdered in a church in Birmingham, Alabama. I watched that dream turn into a nightmare as I moved through the ghettos of the nation and saw my black brothers and sisters perishing on a lonely island of poverty in the midst of a vast ocean of material prosperity. And I saw the nation doing nothing to grapple with the Negro's problem of poverty. I saw that dream turn into a nightmare as I watched my black brothers and sisters in the midst of anger and understandable outrage, in the midst of their hurt, in the midst of their disappointment, turn to misguided riots to try to solve their problem. I saw that dream turn into a nightmare as I watched the war in Vietnam escalating, and I saw the so-called military advisors, some 16,000 strong, turn into fighting soldiers until today over 500,000 American boys were fighting on Vietnamese soil. I saw that dream turn personally into a deferred dream, into blasted hopes. But in spite of that, I close by saying to you today that I still have a dream. Because you know, you can't give up on life. If you lose hope, somehow you lose the vitality that keeps life moving. You lose that courage to be that quality that helps you go on in spite of it all. And so he closes and says, so today I still have a dream. What's your dream? What's your dream? What experience will it be for you to remember, like the Israelites when they returned to Zion, as though one was dreaming? What's your dream? What's your deepest dream? Perhaps that dream may have indeed turned into a nightmare. And if it did, I hope that you are reminded the words of Scripture, that those who sow in tears might reap with shouts of joy. My family, staying woke, the coming of Advent, the coming of Jesus Christ into this world is about those who sow in tears, reaping with shouts of joy. That those who thought that oppression and captivity and the sickness and pain and the powerful had the last word, they reap with shouts of joy when they realize that a miracle of the saving of the world comes through a baby boy. Those who sow in tears reap in joy. I hope that when you sow in tears, you know that your reaping will come in joy. The psalm says that those weeping endures for the night joy. Comes in the morning. Y'all, it's the morning. And so we got to experience God's dream and God's hope and God's joy. God is coming. No. God is here. And I hope you see it. And I hope you sow and reap in pain, but also in joy. I love you and bless you.